One day, when many tax collectors and other outcasts came to listen to Jesus, the Pharisees and teachers of the law started grumbling. "This man welcomes outcasts and even eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. There once was a man who had two sons. The younger of the two sons said to him, "Father, give me my share of the property now." So the man divided his property between his two sons. After a few days, the younger son sold his part of the property and left home with the money. He went to a country far away where he wasted his money in reckless living. He spent everything he had. Then a severe famine spread over that country and he was left without a thing. So he went to work for one of the citizens of that country who sent him out to his farm to take care of pigs. He wished that he could fill himself with the bean pods the pigs ate, but no one gave him anything to eat. At last, he came to his senses and said, "All my father's hired workers have more than they can eat, and here I am about to starve. I will get up and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against God and against you. I am no longer fit to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired workers.'" So he got up and started back to his father. He was still a long way from home when his father saw him. His heart was filled with pity, and he ran, threw his arms around his son, and kissed him. "Father," the son said, "I have sinned against God and against you. I am no longer fit to be called your son." But the father called to his servants. "Hurry," he said, "bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. Then go and get the prize calf and kill it. And let us celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and is now alive. He was lost, but now he has been found." And so the feasting began. In the meanwhile, the older son was out in the field. On his way back, when he came close to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What's going on?" "Your brother has come back home," the servant answered, "and your father has killed the prize calf because he got him back safe and sound." The older brother was so angry that he would not go into the house. So his father came out and begged him to come in. But he spoke back to his father, "Look, all these years I have worked for you like a slave, and I have never disobeyed your orders. What have you given me? Not even a goat for me to have a feast with my friends. But this son of yours wasted all your property on prostitutes, and when he comes back home, you kill the prize calf for him." "My son," the father answered, "you are always here with me, and everything that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be happy because your brother was dead, and he is now alive. He was lost, but now he has been found." The words of Jesus for all people.
He's been lost and now is found. Let's pray together. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Jesus loved to tell a good story, and we call them parables. But he loved stories, and so I'd like to tell you a couple stories today. The first story is about a boy named Tony. Tony was only 14 years old when he got involved in a gang in San Diego. And it was only a couple months after joining up that he and another gang member robbed a pizza delivery driver. Tony shot and killed the college student who was working to drop off a cheese pizza in a neighborhood near his college. Tony Hicks' first and only victim was a 20-year-old named Tariq Khamisa. And it was at the trial that Hicks' guardian at the time, Ples Felix, was utterly gutted by guilt and sorrow about this murder. And so he made a pledge to help the Khamisa family in any way he could for as long as it took. It was through this connection that Tony Hicks met his victim's father, Azeem, face to face in prison. Tony would describe it as the most difficult conversation of his entire life. And it was there at that table in the prison where Azeem Kamisa asked, where Azeem Kamisa forgave his son's killer. And it was from this moment that the Tariq Kamisa Foundation was born. To honor Tariq, the three men, Paliz Felix, Azeem Kamisa, and Tony Hicks, the murderer, they began to help schools to enact principles of restorative justice. They wanted to do this to combat the systems of poverty and hopelessness that had led people like Tony to pursue a family that was actually a gang. I want to tell you another story. It's about another murder. This one was committed by a woman at NCCIW, where we have spent a lot of time. If you have been to NCCIW, I have no doubt that you have met this woman. Her story is painful for her, and so to protect her, when she wants to tell you her story, she will. I'm going to call her Susan. Susan committed a murder and was given the death penalty. It was during sentencing reform in the 1990s that her death penalty sentence was converted to life in prison. After 3 decades in prison, now in her 70s, Susan became eligible for parole. In 2018, the first wife of Susan's victim found out that as part of the parole eligible status, that Susan occasionally could be taken out of prison on a day pass. We know a lot about this because we take women out of prison on day passes. We know this program helps women in prison to prepare for life outside of prison, a world that is completely different from when they entered, especially for someone like Susan, who started prison in 1989. The first wife of the victim was furious. It just seems bizarre to me that our society finds a first-degree murderer going out to nice lunches and being treated to that. On the one hand, the state says murderers will be punished to the full extent allowed by the law. And on the other hand, the state rewards her with lunch outings and grooms her for release. That was part of a news report about this process. I can understand the rage. Losing someone to murder is just about the most painful thing I can imagine. And I also know that we live in a culture steeped in revenge. Oftentimes, the only way we know how to feel right when we've been hurt is to make the person hurt in return. Our carceral system is fed by this philosophy. I think all of us know who've worked with women in prison that these institutions are not designed for rehabilitation or accountability or healing. They punish. There was a man who had 2 sons. And the younger of the 2 sons made this incredibly presumptuous demand that he be handed over half of his father's estate prior to his father's death. I want to tell you the seriousness of what's happening here. This isn't getting a loan on your future finances left by your parents. This is rejecting kinship of your people. It is to reject the fabric of family that is so central to the life of Jesus in his day. And things only get worse. This younger son takes what his father has worked his life for, what his father has saved up as inheritance for the future, so that his line can go on and thrive. He takes this wealth and he uses it. He uses it on silly, awful things. And then things get even worse. The economy gets bad. There's a famine. And this younger son has no money left. And he's far from home. We can safely assume outside the boundaries of the Jewish community he was raised in. Judaism is known for this process of almsgiving as a spiritual practice. Gentiles, on the other hand, are not known for taking care of the poor. All of this adds up to a particularly dire situation for this young man. And then something happens. The younger brother came to himself. He comes to his senses. He clearly sees and understands the situation before him. He is in a foreign place with no money, no social status, and no family, and he's starving. I often think about our chaplain friends at the Interfaith Prison Ministry for Women as a came to themselves ministry for incarcerated people who look around and say, "My God, how did this happen to my life? How did I get here?" And then these are the people who gently and graciously hold this space. I think about Tony Hicks, realizing the scope of his crime and what it meant to open the door and meet the man, meet the father of the man he killed. That is a holy, fragile place. I have known a lot of people who have come to their senses in prison and out of prison, in relationships and marriages, in careers, in addiction. One day you look around and you realize just how bad it's gotten. You realize you're at the end of the line, you are at rock bottom, and there is nowhere left to go. For the younger brother in the story, this moment includes pigs. It's likely most of us know that pigs are one of the ritually unclean animals of Judaism. And he is having to consider feeding on their scraps. He's looking and saying, "I'd like to join in." And it's one thing to find yourself in this place, and it's another thing to know what to do next. But something in this younger brother sends him back to his family. He decides he's going to go to his father and ask if he could just be one of the hired hands. He'll earn his keep. He doesn't expect anything else. And before this younger brother arrives home, his father spots him from across the pasture, and the father runs to his son, his arms out, ready not only to embrace him, but to forgive him, and then to celebrate him. He wants to throw a party for him, a big, expensive party for him. "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one you can find, and put it on him. Oh, and find a ring for his finger. Oh, and some sandals for his feet. Let's get the fatted calf and kill it, and let's eat and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." There's another character in the story, an older brother. He's the one who sticks around, who upholds the family business, assists with the work on the farm. And I'm guessing he's had to do a lot more work since this brother disappeared, and likely with a lot fewer resources. And now this penitent brother shows up empty-handed. And instead of some kind of recognition of the older brother's consistent faithfulness, the younger brother, who essentially assigned his father to death, gets a party. Like a lavish party. Like a kind with the DJ in those dance floor lights that light up, that kind of party. That is incredibly frustrating for me. It reveals some deep truths about people, about all of us. Because a lot of us, I would say actually all of us, want people to get what they deserve. We want people to be punished. We want people who have harmed not just to recognize their crimes, to come to their senses, we want them to suffer. And then we want our own faithfulness celebrated. I feel that deeply. It takes a lot to undo this way of managing our hurt. It takes a lot to receive people back who have harmed, to make paths of return for people seeking forgiveness and restoration to community. We have to get to something deep in ourselves and to let Jesus uproot that and make some space for something new. Because friends, I am the older child in the story and in life. May I see a hand raise for the oldest children of this family? Yes, hello to all. Oh my gosh, it's like basically all of you. What a surprise. I know what it's like. I feel that deep connection. I know what it's like to make sacrifices and work hard and get those grades. I know what it's like to be responsible and law-abiding. I know what it's like to not take shortcuts. And all of that is mixed up in here too, isn't it? Don't I deserve the life that I made and not you? Don't you get to lie in the bed that you've made? And then I remember something. I'm only here because of grace. I'm only here because nothing I've done can make sense of my life without grace. Friends, unpacking that, it takes a lifetime of facing who we are, who we believe ourselves to be, how we think we fit into the world that we have built together. And friends, that's why we're here today. That's why we show up here on Sunday and every other day of the week, because this is a laboratory of grace. We call it church. It's actually an experiment in grace, in pouring out our desires for retaliation, of how our lives are shaped by revenge at every single point, a world where people get what they deserve, and we're trying to do something different. Child, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours, Jesus says to me. But we had to celebrate. We had to. And rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found. I don't think I get the final word today. I want to give that to some really good news. StoryCorps recorded a conversation between Tony Hicks and Azima Kamisa. And I want to leave you with their words today. And afterwards, when Johnny Cash, Stephen comes up to lead us in a time of reflection, I'd like you to take that little piece of paper, the one that dissolves in water. If you don't have one, just raise your hand. I'll send one of my PKs over to deliver that to you. Maybe. No, they've disappeared. Also very PK-like. Let's see, if I could get a volunteer, there should be some in the back. Just keep your hand raised. Thank you. Oh, of course, all the oldest children are volunteering and going to the back all at once. So just raise your hand if you still need a little piece of paper. I'd like to invite you to take that slip of paper and write on it, in a place that you struggled with retaliation and revenge. What's a place in your life that you just have held on to about people getting what they deserve. And together we'll pour these things out to God, a God in Jesus Christ who heals us through grace.
Remember about our first meeting?
We were in the visiting room in Folsom State Prison. I had been anxious over meeting you. I felt so horrible for what I did that I wanted to be able to do something to help you heal in some type of way.
I was amazed of your composure. You didn't portray any of the typical attitude of a 19-year-old in our culture.
Well, coming into a maximum security prison at 16, I had to grow up and mature a little bit just to survive in there.
You know, one of the questions I had for you is if Tariq said anything to you, because you were the last person to see him. We locked eyes for a long time. It's painful.
It was the most difficult conversation that I had in my life.
You were remorseful. You took responsibility for your actions. And in that moment, I got that the spark in you was no different than the spark in me. It was at that point I told you that I have forgiven you.
Your forgiveness was heavy on me. I didn't feel like I was deserving because I knew what I had taken away from me. But your example gave me space to work on understanding that I was worth being forgiven.
I always felt forgiveness is something you give to yourself. I grew up in the Sufi tradition, and I think that helped me a lot to know that I didn't want to go through life in anger and revenge. And after our first meeting, my stride was much bouncier leaving the prison than the one I had walked in with. And I thought to myself, why did I wait 5 years? Because it was a gift. And I honor you for doing that.
Years later, when I was released from prison, I wanted to go back to where I murdered Tariq and just bring my past and my present together in that moment. I wanted to reaffirm to Tariq I was a changed person and that I wouldn't squander this opportunity.
I liked what you said, Tony, to bring your past and present together. That pain is not a bad thing if it makes you a better person. That's how I feel this journey has been for me.
You are instrumental in the person that I am today. And I am extraordinarily grateful to know you and to have you in my life.
That's Tony Hicks speaking with Azeem Kamisa for StoryCorps in San Diego. Hicks was released from prison in 2019 and now volunteers for the Justice Foundation that Kamisa started.